Hello, folks. Tom Sharp here, better known as Nostra Thomas, and I've been away a couple weeks. I tried one from the beach. It didn't go so well with my audio, but it was a pretty good show. Michael Bagby, and we're going to redo it. But we're back, and I have a special guest, Pastor Joe Caminiti, the head pastor still at BCF.
Still
there. Son's doing a good job, too.
Yeah, he's our Boardman campus pastor.
He's doing a really good job. I really enjoy his sermons, too. But you have an interesting story that goes back a long way, and at some points, I want to interject how I fit into the story. My wife taught at the school.
Plus, her father was told and die with my dad.
That was the biggest, like, she thought that was so ordained because it just happened like that. And it was such a great story with your dad and stuff. So I just wanted you to start because most people think pastors just wake up and they're got a halo around their head and they just wander into the ministry like it was easy as pie. And I know that's not the story, but I'm pretty sure your whole family is in the ministry, isn't it?
The ones that aren't full time are helping.
What about David?
My brother Dave passed away.
Your son David.
My son David is in the ministry. You mean my children?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What's he do? I haven't seen him.
Well, David went out to California years ago to pursue music, and he had a nice opportunity, but then he ended up running 8 drug clinics.
What?
Like for a day job while he was trying to break into the music.
Guess that. All I can remember him is that ornery.
Yeah, and your wife really, she spoke so many positive words over him.
I know, I remember.
Yeah,
that.
So now he, David is, he's overseeing our creative things at the church.
How about that? Everybody has this, like, this little piece, you know, that fits in.
Yeah, and they have passions. They could make more money somewhere else, but they just feel called here.
And it's funny, working for the Cafaro Company for 30 years, you watched how that progressed. It's similar, like, Mr. Cafaro had his time. He did business his time. Tony then had his time, you know, knocking heads and, you know, and then here comes the young generation. And each one of those generations, none of them could have fit into the other one. Because the way Anthony does it would have never worked in the 80s. Anyway, Tony did it in the 80s. That wouldn't have worked now. Those days are over. So kind of like a ministry, things evolve.
They do.
And I happen to say that I watch your show every week. I enjoy it thoroughly. I get plenty of good laughs out of it.
Yeah, I try to relate with some funny stories.
But, you know, what's funny is I always tell this story. I was sitting at church at Victory, and the message was about what God is repels against and what he's drawn to. So we're going down these lists. I got my thing because he has an outline, and I'm all of a sudden I start laughing. I cannot stop laughing. I mean, to the point where I couldn't breathe or anything. So my wife, what is wrong with you? I go, I've got 4 on the rappel and I don't have any on the yet. And we both start laughing then. So finally, Pastor Thomas comes up. We did something. He goes, what were you laughing about? I go, well, you know, I'm not going to lie to the pastor. I was 0-for-4 on that list. I had 4 on the bad side. He goes, only you would tell me that story.
Just, good to be honest.
And you're on that screen, and I could see myself blibbering laughing over it. But yeah, it was pretty funny. I've had a couple of those. Like we also had the when you go up front and you have your sins on this card, and you put them in Sea of Forgetfulness. So there was a boat. So everybody in the congregation walks up, puts their. They want that to go in the Sea of Forgetfulness. I walked up, I go, do you have a little bit more paper? He started, get out of here. So anyways, I want you to start when you were all the boys together and how you got where you are.
Yeah, so I grew up with 6 brothers, and my mom and dad had us in Catholic church every Sunday. They were devout, but I walked away from God right around 10th grade all the way and just began to live, you know, a very sinful life. And then my brother Tony and I opened a Still Valley Barbell Club right out of high school. I had an offer to go to California and buy my uncle's business out there. But we were so into Arnold at the time. I wanted to try this venture first. And so we did. And at that point, I mean, I was just living in outright sin. I came to a point where I didn't think God existed and would have went to jail for a lot of the things I was doing if I were caught with drugs and that, you know, all that type of stuff. But I had a guy come up. His name was Lou. He joined the club, and he paid me to train him extra. So I had to train him 3 days a week. But after he signed up the first day, he looked at me and said, "Jesus loves you, Joe." And that's when I came back. It just blew my gaskets. I said, "Are you one of those blankety blank Jesus freaks?" And so then I got a bunch of my buddies in the gym to make fun of him every time he came up, and I made fun of him. And Tom, this went on for 3 months, but during that 3 month period, now I look back and I know what was happening. The Holy Spirit was convicting me that I needed Christ and I was a sinner, but it didn't happen right away, but probably 2.5 months in. And then at 3 months, he called me one day because I began to ask him questions about the Bible. He said, "Turn this show on." And it was at that time, the 700 Club. And I watched, and it was a special edition. They were covering a Jesus concert in the summer. And I heard all these different preachers and all these songs. And at the end, I knelt down and accepted Christ. And it was a radical conversion. And then I was spirit-filled that day, too, which, you know, I had never heard about being spirit-filled and speaking with other tongues. And, you know, but I opened my Bible for the first time that Lou had given me. I never read the Bible. And I opened it up to 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14, which is about that subject. So then I just prayed and said, "God, I want it." And it just fell on me in my office, and I began to pray. So I went home that night and went to bed. I was just, didn't even know what, I didn't know what to think of all of it. It was a heart conviction. The next day I walk up, my brother Tony opened up, and he's reading. We had a stack of girly magazines, and he's reading one. And I just got upset. I don't know what came on me. I grabbed it and said, "This is sin, boy, and it will send you to hell." It wasn't the best thing to say to Tony at the time. And I threw him away, and he got mad at me. But I started going to a Bible study with Lou at the back of Casey's restaurant. Our gym was right across from the Southern Park Mall, behind Pazzini's Music at the time. And Nick was the owner. I forget his name, but he had a lot of buildings in the Borman area. We started this Bible study, and it ended up all these guys in the gym accepted Christ. They were some of the toughest guys, you know, up there. So my mom sent Tony a couple weeks in. She said, "Pull him out by the ears. He's in a cult." So then he comes up to pull me out by the ears.
And what else could they think?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they don't know.
Jim Jones had just happened.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
So it's natural thought, really.
Yeah. And I stopped going to bars. My mom was mad at me because I stopped going out. She goes, "Why don't you go out like a normal kid?" But she used to hate me for going out because I'd come home drunk all the time. But she just wasn't sure what to think. So Tony comes up. He ends up seeing the biggest guys in the club. And then he knows he's not pulling me out, you know, by the ear. And then he sits down. And that night, he accepts Christ. And then within, I don't know, a couple months, my mom and all my brothers and their wives, it took my dad a year, but then he accepted
Christ. That's still short time.
Yeah,
I mean, that type of upbringing.
Yeah, it was a radical change in my life. I just went, I jumped in 100%. It's my personality. And so then a couple years after that, I went to a couple, like I was going to Warren Christian Assembly over on Todd Avenue.
I went there.
Yeah. Barney Leone. And then I felt called to Bible school, and I went. And, in Bible school, my goal was never to come back here because I just felt like I wouldn't be accepted in my hometown. And I just felt like I'll do anything but come here. So I had a couple offers. I had an offer to become a executive pastor at a really large church I attended when I was in Bible school. But God just dealt with me. I needed to come back. So I ended up saying yes. I met my wife. We were engaged. We came back. And then I just started the church in 83 as a 24-year-old, engaged to be married. So I had never done that in my life, but I just felt I was supposed to. So that's how I jumped in as a young guy.
That's a big jump.
I had nothing to lose, though. I didn't have any money.
Yeah, but you had a business you could have went.
I could have went.
A lot of
my uncle was very disappointed I didn't go.
Because I grew up basically in the church. My aunt was a preacher at Southington Christian
Church.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Doris Brumbaugh was the preacher. And I remember going, and you didn't have any choice about going. It wasn't like you just had to go. But I remember sitting there and somebody dropped the collection plate and I start laughing and I got a from my mom. So my dad never went to church. So we go get up and get ready. He's getting ready to get his football bets in and stuff. And he worked copper weld as a millwright. So we got stuck in the snow out trying to get out for church. So my moms were out there. I was going to go in and ask him, you go in. I'm not going in. So finally, I go in and say, hey, Dad, we're stuck. I hear you out there. I go, we're not going to be. So he gets mad. Goes out, underwear, no shoes, and a t-shirt, and proceeds to maneuver it so he knocks out both wagon wheels.
Your dad was,
he was
a pretty tough guy.
Yeah, I just smashed the car, everything else. He goes, now go. And I'm like, oh my God, did you just see that? I mean, there were so many things growing up that I saw. Like, my neighbor would steal the ball. We have a ball diamond right in front of our house. And team would hit a foul ball, and she'd run out there, big Russian lady, take the ball, and cut it up, and throw it, you know, like some weird movie, like The Burbs or something. So one day, my friend,
That is crazy.
I'm 20, at least, and I throw the football over his head on purpose, and it goes in her yard. She runs out to get it, and we start yelling, hey, oh, come on, get the football back. My dad has the window open, and he's sleeping because he's on midnight. Here he comes out the door. My friend goes, oh no, this is, he goes up, grabs the football from the lady and gives it to me. She jumps on his back. This is a neighborhood. This isn't out in the farm somewhere. This is everybody's watching. He turns around and punches her right in the face and she hits the ground and rolls over. And we're all going, oh my God. So they were like, everybody's talking about it. It just got to be
the
crazy house. It's the crazy house. So who doesn't hit their neighbor lady in the face? It got to be like part of a joke, a running joke, where people would just come over. That's the house where he punched the lady. And so how much chance did I have there at that point? Because seriously.
You're going to follow. Boys follow their dad.
Dad, uncle, both grandfathers were known as people that just beat your ass. They don't talk. They just hit. So I had to grow up with my dad thinking that everything happened. I should have hit the guy. Why didn't you punch the guy? I mean, everything still does that. And I can't. You just go around punching people. It just doesn't work like that anymore. So I remember I never had a beer in school. The closest thing to a swear word when I was in high school, I said jackal a couple of times because I was really, my mom would not allow it. And then something happened between then and girls and going out and nighttime. And I remember your famous, and I say it all the time, it looks good and it always takes you further than you really want to go. It just keeps going. Sin. And now you add a little more to it. Now that becomes normal. And now you're going out Saturday night, and now you're and it just keeps you in that path. And it's really hard to get out of it once you're in it. Because if you're decent looking or you got girls issues and now you got friends that you're getting dressed up and you're going out, and that becomes way more important than church. And that road I was on a long time until Ange brought me there. I was a hardened. I didn't like hugging.
Would you say you were a born-again Christian at that young age?
Yeah.
Just kind of walked away.
At 12 years old, I went up front. I told my mom, don't come up, make me cry or anything. I'm just going to go up there. It was almost like a duty. Okay, I'm going to get this done, so I don't have to hear about it anymore. So was it really? Then I got into the thing of getting saved every week. Like I had, just sit there and, oh, no, I did that. Gosh, I got to get. And you just don't get out of that mode where you think you're not saved again. But I remember coming and filled with the Holy Spirit. I thought, don't start this stuff. I'm not buying into that. So I would just ignore it. But when we went on vacation, there's a lady sitting in Cozumel by the door, and my wife, who tries to talk to everybody, she wants to, aren't you from Ohio? Nobody's from Ohio. These people are from Mexico. She knows everybody, calls them by their name. That's not their name. She goes up to this lady, and they go, don't talk to her. She doesn't talk, and she won't understand. My wife starts talking in some different language, and this lady raises her head up and starts talking back to her. I'm watching this going, I don't even believe what I'm saying. She's talking. She's laughing. This lady's laughing. Ange is talking. Then it's over. And Ange doesn't really remember what happened. I go, I'll never forget that the rest of my life. You can't tell me that it doesn't exist after you see that. There's no way you can tell me that. So me making fun of it, God said, there, I'm going to give you something that you're, and that was it for me. A moment
he
that
had
you,
to
can't,
hit you
can't take that away.
Intellectually.
Yeah. So those were the things. I was more excited about coming to BCF than Cavs front row tickets. You name it, Wednesday night, I had to go see what something's going to happen. And that's really big difference between, I remember sitting at Victory, and they had some guest speaker. Nothing against this guest speaker. It's like a missionary, really dry. My son Vince is laying on the seat. Get up. Get your feet off the thing. He was probably 7. And I go, get up. God's watching. He goes, even God knows this is boring.
Kids are truthful sometimes.
He just comes out and says, so, I mean, you know, it is. But when you go expecting something to happen, it usually happens if you're going there for the right reason. So I would run there. I would leave work early, whatever I had to do. So I have to give you credit, because that church pulled me out of a really bad spot.
Yeah.
I was hard as a, I wasn't even thinking about going. It wasn't even like a, maybe we can go to church. It was never going to happen. The Saturday night, I'm not getting up early. That was no way happening. So little by little, that hugging and those songs, them, I got really soft about it. And then I start playing drums at the feedings, and then I could not stop crying. And I would go, don't you dare cry. Don't you? And just start crying. So I'm not a crier. So why am I crying all the time? So it just felt like a cleansing of my, you know, looking out there, feeling soft, look at that kid with bad teeth. It would just hurt me so bad, because originally when I went to some of yours, all I did was eat and leave and complain about the food. So I told Ange, don't you ever bring me to one of these things again. I'm never coming to these. And the same thing you say you're never going to do ended up be what I wanted to do.
Yeah, and that's something.
It's amazing. So then I got to the point where, you know, everybody's handing out groceries. Okay, handing out groceries. But I'm watching this, and it's like mechanical, and the kids are asking for another pop. You already had one pop. And I go, oh my gosh, if we're doing it, like this is for us. We're supposed to be doing this for them. And I actually got like a really, thanks, Joe. Oh, you're back home. Or did you make a robot of yourself? You're that smart. And so the softness of it has to be part of it. And I really did have that soft part of it as a tough, mean guy. I really got it while we were there.
The inner change, the inner conversion, and then growth.
So then you got to TV. So what? How's it changed now? Because I haven't been there. I watch it. But what's the latest on, you know, you got another church in Boardman. Mm-hmm. So how did that come about? What's?
Well, we felt led to many years ago to launch campuses. And there's different ways, you know. Some churches, they just send a pastor out, and he does all the teaching, which is fine.
Yeah, Victory does it like a kind of like that.
Yeah, they're much very much like that.
Yeah.
And then there's churches that the senior pastor gives them his notes, and they all kind of make it their own. And then there's video campuses, and I had it really on my heart to do a video campus. So what happens in Boardman is, we had a guy start the campus for a couple of years, and then he moved to Arizona. But what happens is you have a campus pastor. They do everything I would do and our associates. But when the word comes on, it's a live stream. So I'm preaching live to our campus and their campus and online. And the people love it. It's been, you wouldn't think it would work, but people are so used to technology, just like they're watching this screen now. And knowing it's live is what really makes it fun. Right. So they have their own worship band, and they have an amazing worship band. Joe Jr., who's my son, is the campus pastor now. He's doing an incredible job.
Yes. Every time Ange watches him, she, I can't believe.
She had him in school.
Kid in school.
When Joe graduated, he graduated from YSU, and he felt called into the ministry. And so after he graduated with a communication degree, I sat him down. I said, you know, the valley's dying. Businesses are leaving. Population's decreasing. I said, why don't you? I said, I know churches all over the country that would, they're looking for a young pastor. I said, you could walk into 300, 400 member church and just take
go
over
from there.
And I said, why don't you go where it's growing? The Carolinas. Warm too. Or Columbus, somewhere where. And I made him pray about it. And I said, you know, I said, if I don't want you to just do this because I am, you know, I felt called here, but maybe God wants you to do something else. And after taking weeks and weeks, he just said, no, I'm called here. He goes, I don't want to be anywhere else. And I said, well, I'm not ready to retire. He goes, I'm okay with that. I don't have to be the lead person, but I feel called here. So this is 10 plus years ago.
Wow.
That he just made a decision.
So he doesn't come home and go, boy, you were off today, Dad. Sure you don't want me to take
him? He might think that, but he never says it to me, you know. It might be a thought in his mind, Tom. But, you know, we have a plan worked out. I don't know if it's 7 or 10 years. I have no idea.
Well,
we're going to just watch it happen.
Yeah, I mean, because really, I think it's better now than when I was going. I mean, I think maybe the years of experience and seeing some things that I think it's better now.
Hopefully we grow. You know how in every one of our lives, bad things happen, tough things happen, and they'll either make us bitter or better. Mm-hmm. And so I have endeavored, no matter what happens to me, good or bad, I'm going to love God, love people, trust God. And I think that's when all of us grow spiritually, when we come, if we allow bitterness to get in our hearts, then we're done.
That's true, because, you know, I found out, and I let some things bother me and got my eyes more on people than I did, and let some things throw me off for a while. The devil loves nothing better than you get out of the game for a while. Go ahead, get mad about that.
He can't keep you out of heaven, he wants to just
now you can't help a soul. Keep
that's what he wants.
Complaining and...
Wants us,
but I just got to the point where I was thinking, why does it seem that Christians have such a hard time with sorry? They're the most forgiven people. They know the story.
We've been forgiven.
But why is it they have to add something? If I did this, I'm just a simple sorry.
I think it's two things, Tom. They're sisters, pride and insecurity. So some people aren't proud, but the insecurity comes out like pride. So they just can't admit they did something out of insecurity or out of pride. And I think God wants all of us to come to a place where we realize, you know, we're all imperfect. And we actually help people when we show some humility and say, hey, I blew it, forgive me.
I remember having the best service in the world, playing the music, everything's great, praying for people, get out in the car. And 70 feet later, what is this guy doing? Move you. In 10 minutes, I've already, Jesus got thrown in the corner and I'm just going to be an idiot. I mean, right out of the parking lot. And I remember going something. I was on the radio with Ron Verb and he says, well, I know you're a big shot. You just like tell people get out of the way. I go, I'm kind of enjoying this social distancing. I get the guy another 10 feet. Good for me. And I said, I'm just God's love. I go, I don't know if you don't want to talk about that, but I would flood this earth every week. If I was gonna let's start all over every week. Just keep the ark ready. We're gonna need it pretty soon again. And I go, his love is just,
it's amazing
when you think about that, because my wife always elbows me, you know, God loves that guy. Well, he really doesn't know him. And I don't think Jesus ever drove either, by the way.
So thank I God make for all, our wives, right?
Yeah, but she's always like reminding me that, and it's true. You can't.
One of the things that helped me is just realizing that, you know, how there's always someone we're ahead of, in, you know, whether it's intellectually or what, there's always someone we can look at and we're doing better than them. But then there's always someone that's doing better than us. But if we just compare ourselves to God, like his standard is perfection. And I don't care how bad anybody is compared to God, I'm worse than they are, but he still loves me.
Yeah.
You know, I can't meet up to his standards, but that's where the blood of Jesus comes in and it cleanses us. And so that helps me have mercy now. It's kind of like the guy that was forgiven of much and then he didn't forgive. And it's like, man,
that's true.
I've missed it so many times. There's so many mistakes and sins. And, you know, thankfully people don't know them all, you know.
And it's the motive things, like, why am I really saying that? Is there, you know, if you, you just have to catch yourself sometimes on what you're doing, what's the motive for what you're doing? To gloss yourself over this and act like you as the martyr, and the, you have to, you know, because if it's just self humiliation, like to get something, then it's worthless.
I agree with that.
And, you know, you want to, like, I catch myself and try to, at the end of every day, I try to think, okay, because this happens to me a lot. I'll be sitting at a restaurant and somebody will go, I know you, and I'll go, oh, I hope it's good. Well, if we had that show and you told me if I didn't get out of there, you were going to throw me out. I probably did say that. I said, but you have to understand, I had a job with carnies, promoters, temps, people trying to steal stuff. I had to do that. I had to get mean, nasty, get that crap out of here before, you know, or I have a venue where you're not allowed to bring food in. Oh, it's up here comes a pizza truck. Give me that pizza. I'm going to take this in there and see who ordered this. And I walked in. Hey, who ordered the pizza? What a surprise. Nobody responded. Good move. And I threw it on the table. So I had to get to a point where I was being so like a drill sergeant that some of the people didn't want to be in the show. And then I like didn't want to even do the show anymore because I was coming in. You're not allowed to smoke. And I would just sit there and throw a bunch of rules. And so finally, I had to get myself prepared to go in the building. Okay, just try to smile, try to be nice. Maybe that'll work better. And it actually worked better for me to go, man, we know you're not allowed to smoke in here. I know. Other than, hey, you're not allowed to smoke in here. Well, I want to, you know, you right away create the problem. And sometimes you're just looking for that. You know, your flesh just wants to get into some kind of argument. What's wrong with us? But I was seriously, I was like hoping the guy would say something. Like he's pounding nails. Like, hey, how about if I come over to your house and pound nails into your wall? Would you let me do that? Then why are you doing it here? Oh. I get it. We became really close friends over that because I came back later. Look, Jeff, I'm sorry about that. He goes, oh, man, that was really funny. I go, well, just looking for trouble. And we became really close friends. Yeah. I used to tell people that story all the time.
So that you spoke earlier, that's probably some of the aggression you learned from your dad and your uncles. You know, it's kind of built into your psyche. But it seems like you're learning to.
Oh, just, I'm just, way better.
Yeah, just put it down.
I'm way better, but I just, you know, this COVID thing was a real challenge, and I accepted a partner position with Simon DeBartlow people right at COVID. So I took my 30 years, and I'm going to do this now. It's Lifestyle Center, water park, really. I didn't get, it didn't happen. So I got kicked to the curb.
So COVID had to slow it down.
And I got killed. I had to go through most of my saving, everything just to stay afloat. So it was really difficult because, you know, I was in that mode of why me, and, you know, I sowed all this seed into everybody else. Why isn't anybody helping me? And it made me bitter for a while. So I started watching your show. So
you can help me get out of there. It was good to hear from you too.
I was so happy for you because it just seemed like you were so relaxed and had, it was just better. Or maybe I just.
Well, I think we grow over time. You grow, I grow.
But it was really, really interesting. But then again, it had a lot of Bible verses and things around it. Because I like that one where you know, what's around that verse? You can make any verse into whatever you want to. A lot of people do that, but you got to read above and below, and all of a sudden it's not the same thing. People don't want you to do that. No, no, no. Just concentrate on what I'm telling you. This is. So Annie, what's the girls doing? Your daughters?
Well, my daughter Michelle's pregnant, and she leads worship at the Warren campus.
Oh my goodness!
And Joe's wife Erin leads worship at the Borman campus. I don't know if you've ever met Erin.
I don't think so.
They met at student camp when they were really young, and dated by phone for a couple of years, and then got married. She's awesome.
See, all I can remember, and it's funny in life, and you remember kids from school, wherever, you remember them how they were when the last time you saw them. So all I can think of
little
is
kids,
your kids being really little.
And like Dana has a 2.5-year-old.
That's just
and she's a graphic artist, and a very talented one. She graduated from YSU for graphic arts. And then Dave's doing the creative. Dave wrote a musical called Get Off My Lawn that was, we did it 2 years in a row. It was so amazing. And he's just a talented songwriter.
That's awesome.
Composer, yeah. So my son has a theory about that, Joe Jr. Here's his theory. In a small community like this, and then one that's dying, kind of, you know, there's not a lot of jobs. So he really believes God makes pastors' kids, gives them a lot of gifts, because nobody wants to come here and take those positions. So your kids can do it. Because we tried to get a graphic artist for a couple years, and we had a good one that moved to Tennessee, and nobody wanted to move here. They loved our church, but they didn't want to live here. And so finally, we start using Deanna before she even graduated. We tried to get a worship leader. We had a really good worship leader. His name was Brandon Estelle, and he was from Kansas City. And we loved him, but he was on his third child, no family, and his wife just wanted to go back and be with family. So he resigned, and I looked for 2 years to fill the gap. And
2 years?
Nobody wanted to move here. I found pastors all over the country because I used the professional services to do it. And so Erin started doing it and did an incredible job. And then Brandon came after that. And then after Brandon came, Michelle just started leading because we didn't have anyone else. And Erin was doing other things at the time. And everybody kept telling me, why are you looking? She's doing a great job. So I just didn't want to hire one of my kids. Kind of, you put them in the frying pan when you hire them, you know. But
that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but it helps to have kids that God put some gifts in. That really helps, you know.
You know, I played the drums big in music, and none of my kids care about music. I mean, they like to listen.
I never played. I don't have any talent. I can't even. I tried.
Weren't you playing the piano or something?
No, no. My brother Mike can. I tried to. I took piano lessons. Yeah, for 2 years. I never got through the first book. Tom, I couldn't even master the first piano.
But that's amazing because you are so task-oriented. I would have figured that you would have just done that.
Something's wrong inside. I can't figure it out. So I just, after
you know what's
years,
funny is I would go and never go to practice at Victory. But I played. I had all this stuff. I didn't even know what the songs were because I had stuff. And they were, oh, God, never goes to practice. He teased me. I would just pick up the song and go... And finally, they had a guest, and he came back to me, and he goes, I want you to stay up here for my band. Because what you're doing is really...
So you can play by ear. You can play by ear.
Dominic Barragona, who we did all the shows, and we did, remember Tsunami?
Yeah.
I would hear behind the music, because we would go get shows, and I would listen, and I'd hear, like, something off. Or when I was singing in a band we had, I would go, stop. He goes, I just hear behind the song, like what's going on in the background. So when the song starts, I just pick up the beat and just start doing something to add to the song. Yeah,
that's a gift.
Song. Yeah. I really enjoy it.
I have none of that.
So. Yeah, but you don't know. Maybe.
I tried.
Did you try drums too?
No, but I'm sure. Know. We had them in our basement because I have a couple brothers that were drummers.
It's just amazing because we tried to push it on Samantha and she didn't want to play the violin. And then nobody wanted to play the drums. I have drums all over the house. You'd think somebody would go up and bang on it.
Nobody wanted
nothing.
To.
Whenever they were tired of hearing me doing it, they just said, forget it.
You know, they probably just have other gifts, right?
And I got to get, and you don't even have to comment on this, but we just had the big 9/11 thing. I just
want Memorial.
And I get on Facebook, which I'm kicked off. You know why I'm kicked off? Because I said I had a friend that got the shot and a metal magnet stuck to his arm. It was magnetic. Off I went for 30 days. So apparently you're not even allowed to talk about something that actually happened. So my theory on that is, have you ever had anything in your life forced on you that was good? It's never good. There's something wrong. Yeah. When the government, who doesn't care about us ever, about anything else, is so worried about us getting this shot. So I think of the 9/11 as this. Never forget. We forgot. Because right now what we're letting going on is worse than that will ever be.
Yeah.
And we turn our way away from it and act like it's not happening. Well, just give us the information on the shots. We'll decide what we want to do. But when you start telling us that this, and why doesn't Pfizer CEO take that shot if he's so good with the shot? Now the shot's not even working. Now everybody's getting COVID with the shot. So now it's back to masks that don't work. I have a surgeon in my family that said, you might as well put on your head. You grow hair, maybe.
You have to have the really good mask.
So it's just one little thing after another, because I truly believe our generation has blown it. Our parents were a little too tough, so we pansified our kids, give them everything they want. Teacher yelled at them, we got to go in and get in the middle of their little squamish. And we have completely made the biggest pansy society there ever was. I mean, look at this. Oh my gosh, I might get sick. Well, wrap yourself in bubble wrap and go sit in the corner for the rest of your life. What do you want to do? You can get a car wreck. You can, anything could happen. So what do? Scared? And you just... So I had to get that off my chest because it bugs me every day. I was in the airport and I cannot. They don't care if I fall off the plane in midair as long as I got my mask on. And I'm not kidding you. This is exactly the instructions.
I fly a lot.
Did you hear this one? Okay. If the oxygen falls down, we're losing pressure in the cabin. Make sure you grab it. Take off your mask and put the... Oh, yeah, I'm sure that everyone's going to be worried about that while they put their foot in your head and try to get off the plane. Just stop. What's with the seatbelt thing, too? What is so hard about that that we have to have that demonstration? Hey, could you do that again? You plug the front end of the...
Maybe there's one new person that's ever never worn a seatbelt up.
In case of a landing in the water, your seat is a float cushion. Okay. Landing in the water? Try crashing into the water.
Yeah, it's a difficult time. As you know, I don't pick a side.
I know,
publicly, but you know, I encourage our people to get involved. I say some of you may be called to politics. Get involved. We need some really righteous, honest people to run for office.
Really, because you know what? I've talked to the state senator from PA. Helped me with my unemployment, and we got to talking, and he said, "You know, I came in here with all these ideas, and I'm going to be different." And he goes, and once you get in this thing, it's like a cesspool. You can't, they'll make a joke. They will, if you want a career in politics, you're going to have to just say yes, and that's it. You can't have your own. Look at Trump. You know what they did? They just said, here, go ahead and try that again, somebody else. And look what happened to him. So if you can put up with 4 years of that, come on.
Yeah, and there's a few good ones in there.
Yeah.
In the Congress and the Senate.
Because they made all these knee-jerk Pastor Joe, if I didn't have my senior year in high school, that baseball year, I would have never got money to go to school. My junior year, they struck out a lot, didn't have the pitching credentials, threw my helmet all over the place, you know, having all kind of temper tantrums. And so my senior year, I erased all that. Now, these kids that didn't even get to play their senior year, you just changed their life. And you... Politicians who haven't even run a Kool-Aid stand making all these decisions with businesses. And they've never done anything.
And they don't seem to sit down with business people and ask questions.
It's just sad that we've given that much power. It's supposed to be called serving. I don't see anybody serving. I think they're self-serving. Biden is I call Biden Clueless Joe Corleone Biden, because that's the biggest crime family I've ever seen.
Well, you know,
just not a show about
looking at the landscape lets us know this world's run by really imperfect people. And if they don't submit their hearts to God, they go bad. And you know, I think if we're going to get out of, if we're going to go up as a country, we need really good people to run. Even when I talk to good people locally, they just don't want the headache.
They just don't. They tried to get me to run.
They built amazing things, and they just don't want the headache.
They tried. They voted 200 and something to nothing for me to run for the position in Columbiana. Or I think it was. They wanted me. And I thought about it for 2 seconds. I thought, there's no way I'm letting all the skeletons fly out of my closet. My kids know. Because I won't be able to play the game. I'll come off the stage and grab somebody. There's no chance of me playing that game. So
even if you don't have skeletons, they'll lie about it.
Yeah, they'll put skeletons.
Yeah.
But I did have plenty of skeletons, so I just didn't want to get into that. So I help people run.
That's awesome. The way I look at it is I want to help change people from the inside out. And I pray a lot for our nation. And I know, you know, the Bible talks about in the last days, well, people will become worse. So I'm never sure if that's what's happening, or are we going to have something happen that takes us back the right way a little bit? I'm not sure.
I can't see. What I do remember is being in church in the 70s, watching those Revelation movies. And thought, that's stupid. Who's going to take a thing on their forehead? Oh, that. And now you're looking at this stuff, and it's actually kind of happening. Like,
I think it's precursors.
It's really
you can't do this unless you have this.
Yeah, I always believed this thing was the pregame for the Super Bowl, just to see how much they can make us do and where and what time to go in and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I really do believe, because I used to walk in a restaurant with the mask on. I may take it off. Apparently this disease knows that it's going to attack 3 people in a salon, but not 40,000 people. And it's so bizarre that it makes no sense.
I always tease my kids, if we go in a restaurant and take our mask off, I go, the virus doesn't come at this level.
It also comes after 10 p.m. too. I don't know what that means either.
Yeah, it's just the curfew world we live in, right?
But I think I really do, and you don't have to agree with me, but Nostradamus is always right. And I'm telling you, this is a little pregame. Let's just see how far they'll go. And it's not that, just wear the mask. Okay, so we just keep, just do this. Okay, just do that. If we all ever got together and just said no, but we're so spoiled and pampered, we can't do that. We have to go to these games. We have to do all this stuff. So just wear the mask. Just making it easy. I mean, you can wear a mask all over your body. I told the one guy, let me tell you what. Put the mask on and then put a skirt on too. Because that's what you remind me of, a big sissy. And the guy's like stared at me. I go, that probably didn't help. But he was mad because I didn't have a mask on.
Yeah.
He was giving me these looks, like, and backing up. So I just said, you can put a skirt on while you wear that too. That's what you're fancy.
So I look at the world, I look at it like this. I know my calling is to help people meet Jesus and grow in Christ. But I think there's people in my congregation that, you know, in a loving way, are called to make changes, to be politically involved, to go to school board meetings. And
good.
I think that's important, you know, because it's still a democratic republic.
It is.
Right?
And so we're
allowed to do those
more control now than ever, it seems. So, I think we need to keep our eyes open, because looking the other way and just pretend like it's not happening is never what our country ever did in the past.
Yeah.
So why are we doing it now?
Yeah.
Because what the media does is make you look like a fool. Oh, you're the only one that thinks like that. Oh, look at these people. When in reality, it's just a small portion of these people running our lives. They get up every day mad about something. Wait, a victim of something mad about. Get these 10 commandments off a wall. File suit, because every single day, that's their life, fighting something.
Yeah, it's out there. But one of my favorite scriptures is where sin abounds, grace thus so much more abound. You know, and I think your life is a good example, as far as you saw God come in and break through.
Yeah.
And I pray that way for our politicians. I pray that way for our nation.
I just want
for there to be a breakthrough like that.
I just want, and I've been doing better, but my flesh wants to do its thing first. And then I have to stop.
It's always been your first foot forward, which I could say it was mine too.
I mean, I'm just quick to react. Then I got to say sorry, or quick to, you know, it's just my person. I'm always, you know, no patience, no nothing. Let's go get this, you know, and it.
And I don't think you're the kind of guy that worries someone might hit you or something.
I'm not worried at all.
Yeah, that's
so that's not good either.
That gives you more liberty. Like most of them, especially as you get to my, like I'm 63, it's like, I can't take that guy on anymore. I'm going to behave, right? So yeah, you have to work even harder at that, Tom.
I've always been able to just like, and everybody just gets out of the way.
Yeah, because you're a big guy.
And, but when I do try to talk about the Lord, I have to remember that what I just showed him a couple of days ago, it's not going to be a good witness. So I'm still, what's that? How they say, I'm still eating baby food, and I'm too old to not be eating meat at this point.
Yeah.
So I really do. It's like an everyday challenge.
Yeah, and I really believe the meat of the word is the parts where God asks us, you know, to love our enemies. That's the heaviest parts of the Bible. And you're growing. That's you're doing hard. It. You're
well, you know, it. I pray like it's the way I pray. Lord, you created me. So I don't know what we're doing here, but you're going to need to help me.
Yeah.
And I talk like that in the car, like I need help.
You have a Peter personality, Apostle Peter. And God will use you to break through.
Yeah.
He'll use you to pioneer.
Yeah.
To lead things, to start things from scratch. So, you know, but you can't allow yourself to go off on the angry side. That's all.
I know. And I'm saying a lot of this because it's good for
others
to talk bad about yourself because it helps others. But I'm way kind of past that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to go back and fix some of the stuff that I've, you know, because nobody really remembers. I'm a good tennis player, really good, but they remember me throwing my racket. That's the part that they remember.
Don't you hate that?
Or I'm standing in line. Hey, I know him behind me. You're out. It was an umpire that he threw me out of the game. Or I'm sitting at my son's game and a ref will go, hey, remember your dad? Boy, he hit like, my sons don't want to keep hearing my old story. Stop. He hit like three home runs. I threw him out of the game before the game. So he got in a fight with the other. And I got like all these people sitting there going, and so I can't do anything to change that. I wish it was different, but that's what I'm known for.
You'll change it as you go and they see a different fruit coming out.
But I play in these leagues and I still do the same stuff.
How old are you now?
It's blocked out. I can't say it. I'm not even
saying that on here. Okay.
50-something.
50-something.
And it comes out like Fonzie saying, I love you.
Yeah.
When somebody says, I love you. How old are you? can't even believe I'm saying it.
Yeah.
Because when I was like 20, 50 was... Or somebody died when they were 70. Oh, well, they should have died at 70.
Now that's young, isn't it? Yeah. 70s.
Now I'm going, you're way too young.
So that's only 7 years away. That's really young to me.
Oh, when somebody my age says, well, we're getting old now. You're getting old.
Well, look at Tom,
I refuse
look at Tom Brady, right?
44. I refuse it. I can't. I won't do it. I was in this tennis league, and I was hitting the ball too hard for the because it's a certain age. And I mean, I'm whack, and the guy comes over. Hey, these guys don't want to play. You're hitting the ball too hard. I'm like, well, tell them to go home. I'm not. What do you want me to do? Play badminton? I'm just saying, could you cool it down a little bit? The guy was calling me Jim Thorpe or something as like a joke, and I wasn't even getting it. And I went down to play senior baseball. At what year was that? And I picked up the ball and threw it. Almost hit the guy in the head. It went over his head, and they go, I just never stop playing. So when people get older and they stop and then try again, it's not. I just always kept myself in shape. Like it just, I never went out of season from it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's. I played basketball during basketball season. And when my son didn't throw me the pass, I pouted all the way home and went and talked to him. Yeah, he's like, I'm wide open. He throws it. I go, oh, okay. I'm the one driving. We get in the car. We drive. What's the matter with you? Throw me the ball when I'm open. You got to be. Yeah, we had that conversation in the car. You purposely weren't throwing me the ball.
So you're past all that now, and people are going to see that. Yeah. They'll see that fruit coming out of you.
I hope so, because I did spend a lot of years doing a lot of things to help, you know, plant seeds to people that couldn't afford shows or couldn't, you know, they're candy cap kids. And I'm sitting, I got a lot of enjoyment out of being able to bless those people.
You have a good heart too.
So I didn't just like, you know, covet all the stuff to myself. You know, I'd give up my tickets for somebody. So I do all these things here, but what I'll never forget, I think I'll leave you with this. My old boss said, you got all these good things. There's that thing in front. Blocks all the good things.
That was good. That was a good way of helping.
I'll never
you see
forget
it.
Him.
Yeah, that was
because
awesome.
He goes, when I walk in, I'm the boss. I come in from California. He goes, I look over to see if you're there and you're in a good mood. He goes, why am I doing that? He goes, because you can either lead a lot of people good or you can lead a lot of people wrong. And I never forgot that.
So you're an influencer.
Yeah.
Which is a very good thing.
But sometimes I was influencing people wrong. We were cutting corners, doing stuff. Everybody's doing the same thing I'm doing. I wouldn't let them go to lunch. Every time they go, where are you going? Lunch. Oh, okay. Tom, you can't let people go to lunch. I didn't know. I wasn't doing this. Yeah, well, you're sitting there looking at them when they go by. That means you don't want them to go to lunch.
That's awesome.
But we have numbers to hit. Man, it just, you can't do that. The culture is different. Yeah, but that was my favorite business mentor. His name is Mark Eichler. Never forget him.
Was he part of Cafaro?
No, he was part of the other, when I got into the call center things, I was doing that too. Mm-hmm. Kind of doing both because I was really good on like phone stuff. And he would have me like listen to the people talk and they're calling up. And these are collection calls. They're calling. Yeah, Mr. James Johnson. First of all, Mr. James Johnson means that's something bad and they hang up. So you don't do that. Is Jim there? You know, get him on the phone, then start talking and shut up and let them talk because they'll tell you what you want to hear. So I had the whole place had to redo it all.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have any clue how to get information from people.
That's awesome.
You get information by being quiet. Mm-hmm. And say, you know what? You used to have great credit. What happened? Oh, they love to tell you that story. But you going, you owe $5,409. How are you going to write that check today? No. And I haven't wrote it before. So why would I do it today? And that's what you get.
Yeah.
So they already know they owe the money. So what are you going to do to help them? So that was my big thing. And people don't wake up one day and go, boy, I want to be a call center collection guy. I mean, it's something you have
That's a tough thing.
A tough job. Yeah. But it really helps your communication because I know these kids today. You stare at a phone. They don't have to talk. They can text. They don't have to communicate. And when you walk through, remember when you're young, you walk through, feel a little uneasy. People watching you and stuff. You don't have to do that now because you can just look at your phone and walk through without anything. And that's not good because you're going to have to do that.
A lot of positives, but a lot of negatives.
Because my kids, I had to text them in the next room because I call up. Spit it out. I mean, the conversation was so hard. And like, I'd write this big, I'm so proud of you, but my son Vince writes back, yeah, like the K. Oh boy, I put tears in that. I'm so proud of you, K.
So before we go, let me know you're a grandfather now?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Josie Kenjemi.
Nice name.
Big, dark hair and looks just like me. Of course, everybody, no, he doesn't. I'm telling you, she looks like me. That's a good thing. Trust me. But yeah, really
congratulations.
Cute.
That's beautiful.
It's so.
Changes your life.
It's so. It's another thing, Grandpa. That's another thing that's like. It's always good for like old people, grandpas. I get that.
There's a lot of young grandpas.
I know. There's a lot of young grandpas now. But I wonder what. It's just funny because. I remember my dad not really in that generation. My sister didn't really spend a lot of time with her because she didn't play sports and he worked turns. It's just a different time. So when I had Sam, I was going to not do that. So I flew the kites. I played the dolls. And I remember you had a sermon about if you're going to do it with all your heart. So I didn't just half butt do it. I went out there and we did it. I was the monster. I'm doing all these. She was in the pool. I rubbed her back, you know, we do this little thing where I'd rub her back, count to 20, and then, oh, she counted to 100. You did it to me again. Every night I would do that. And then she got to be 13. I said, who is this? Please leave and bring back. I was devastated at that. She was like, no, who is this person? I know. What happened? And I was just
Hormones.
Floored by that. Cause you know, the boys, you could just cuff them around. It's hard to, and I would let her off the hook over and over again because daddy's not going to do. And that's why God says spare the rod, because that's not what's going to be the right way to do it. My wife would go, you better start making her clean up room. Oh, come on. She never did a dish, never cleaned her room, never. And we walk in her house, we have to take our shoes off. She knows everything and we're stupid. So that's how it ends up.
She learned how to clean though, huh?
On our place though. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you for allowing me to share.
It was a pleasure. We could have gone on a lot further.
Yeah.
But I really do appreciate you coming. You were like on my mind to do this after I watched a couple sermons. Because I wanted people to see, you know, the story. Because unless you go there or watch, you don't know the story, but it's an incredible story.
They can watch any service at believers.cc live. We live stream every service, worship, my message.
Good.
So you can just watch. Oh, we have a YouTube channel. So we're live on Facebook.
And it's really relative for now.
I try to be.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have verses and stuff that have no connection and people get bored and, you know, they change it. But if you can start making it so that it's relevant to what you're going through, people need answers.
Yeah, we live in a time where it's a different time, Tom.
It is.
It's a scary time, really.
It is very. Yeah. And thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for being so transparent through the show here.
Oh, it's part of the show. It's either want me to do zany stuff or talk. I make everyone feel better about their life when I'm done.
What was your phrase again? Nostradamus and I.
I'm Nostra Thomas and I know it all, by the way.
I loved it. I couldn't remember. That was good.
But yeah, I always say, I make you feel so good about your life when you're done talking to me. You'll love yourself when I'm done. All right, guys. Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.